You're listening to Long Distance. I'm Paula Mardo. This is the second part of an audio story called Little Manila. If you missed the first part, it's okay. Just press pause on this episode, go back into your podcast feed, and find the first episode, Little Manila, Part 1. Listen to that, then when you're done, come back here. It'll make more sense when you do. Thanks. A few weeks before going to Stockton, I was on the phone with my mom, and she told me that, at one point, we had relatives in Stockton, like way back in the day. This was huge news to me, but it was confirmed by a cousin, who's basically our family historian, and for final confirmation, I went straight to the source. My 99, then 98-year-old grandfather, my mom's father, who lives in the province of Pampanga in the Philippines.
Say it again.
I can very clearly remember, no?
That's me talking on FaceTime to Rafael Bernardo Pangilinan. Some call him Paeng, but to his kids and grandkids like me, he's Daddy. He and my grandmother made everyone call them Daddy and Mommy, like they're forever young or something. Filipinos have a thing about names. Anyway, in the 1970s, Daddy decided it was time to go in search for his long-lost uncles. Around the 1910s, they left the Philippines in search of opportunity elsewhere. Like a lot of Filipino men, some uncles went to the U.S. Others went to other places. Daddy has all these crazy stories of going to places like Hong Kong and Indonesia to find his long-lost uncles, using old-fashioned contraptions like the phone book. One time, he was in San Francisco with a phone number for an uncle named Moises.
When I called him, I told him I'm the son of Florencia. He was very, very excited. And then I told him I'm leaving for the Philippines tomorrow when you come here. I cannot make it. He was in Stockton. Where are you in Stockton? I'll try to go there. He told me the place. An eating place. So I told Ning Ning, Pasita, and Mommy, sisters, I would like to go to Stockton. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Good. I went to Stockton.
Daddy being Daddy agreed to meet his long-lost, never-before-seen uncle at a random restaurant in a place he'd never been, Stockton, California. It was nighttime, and he drove with Mommy and her sisters who were with them. I asked Daddy what he remembers from meeting Uncle Moises for the first time in Stockton. Remember, he's 98 at the time of this call, so the details are a little fuzzy. The emotion isn't, though.
We were eating in the restaurant. When he entered the door, oh my gosh, wow. I know he's a very close relative. We just embrace each other there is no reason. Ning Ning, Pasita, and Mommy were all shocked.
Daddy says he doesn't know how he knew that it was Uncle Moises. He'd never seen him before. But when Moises walked through that restaurant door, it was just instinct. After the big hug, they talked about old times and stayed in touch after that. Uncle Moises had a wife and kids, and he had a second wife, actually, at some point. Eventually, he moved to Vegas, and one time, he visited the Philippines and stayed at Daddy's house. Uncle Moises seemed to have a good life. But Daddy had another uncle who lived in Stockton, longer than Moises did. His name was Fernando, and for a while, he was a carpenter.
Most of the Filipinos usually stay in California and be farmhands. Fernando was like that.
What year did Fernando go to Stockton again?
He stayed in Stockton most of his life there. 1917 or something, up to 1946 or 47 when he went back to the Philippines.
Fernando never married and didn't have kids. I wondered why Fernando went back to the Philippines. Did something happen to him? Was he just over it? I don't think I'll ever really know the answer. And Daddy couldn't tell me too much more. He was getting a little tired.
Okay, well, thank you for talking with me. Maybe next time we can talk again.
I doubt very much if we can still talk. I am too old for anything.
Please think about it.
I'll put that in my mind.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know what's funny? Daddy was born in the year 1919, and he's talking to me on an iPad. He just turned 99 last month. He definitely has stories. But back to Uncle Fernando, I don't know. After learning about the Manungs of Stockton, I feel like I kind of understand how he might have felt, or what he went through. The Manungs and Manungs who came here during that first wave of Filipino-American immigration in the 1910s, 20s, 30s, they risked a lot. Some sold everything they owned just for a one-way boat ride to America. Some got jobs, got married, stayed in the U.S., like Uncle Moises. For others, things didn't go as planned, like Uncle Fernando. Last episode, we learned about the Manong's early days and the good and bad things they went through as the first Filipinos in America. In this episode, we continue that story, but we're going to do things a little differently. We'll fast forward through time to a little closer to present day. We'll find out what happened to Stockton's Little Manila and what Little Manila is today. And through that, I hope, we'll learn a little more about what happened to the Manungs. That's on this episode, Little Manila, Part 2. If you were around in 2006, or if you've ever heard of a group called the Black Eyed Peas, you may have heard this. Yep, that's Bebot. A mid-aughts pop anthem by the Black Eyed Peas, performed mostly by Apple Diap, who is Filipino and says Bebot means hot chick, or something like that. I've never heard the term, but I have heard the song. Even though it wasn't technically released in the US, the song was on the Peas album Monkey Business, and the music video, which you heard play right before the song, was shared online. If you watch the video now, it's kind of cheesy. The song, a little corny. A bunch of Filipinos and the Peas get together, barbecue party. There's breakdancing, DJing, booty shaking, cameos from all kinds of Filipino-American artists, and for whatever reason, Tila Tequila. Yeah, I have thoughts about some of the tropes and lyrics, but watching it now, it kind of makes me smile and bop my head a little bit. Hats off to my friends, director Patricio Janelsa and editor AJ Calamay, who worked on this. You know, when I went to Stockton, California, I found out they made another version of the Bebot video, one that was set in Stockton. It's called Generation One, as in a nod to the first generation of Filipino Americans. For all kinds of reasons we can probably talk about in a whole nother episode, that version wasn't released. But you can still find it online. I'll link to the video on the website. It's set in the 1930s. Apple plays a Filipino farm worker. After a long day's work, he and some friends head to an unmarked building on an empty street. When they walk in, they see it's a nightclub called the Rizal Social Club, where Filipino men dance with all kinds of, mostly white, women.
So it's these three buildings.
Yeah, so the Mariposa Hotel, the Filipino Recreation Hall. This was the Rizal Social Club. This was actually Filipino owned. If you saw the Black Eyed Peas video Bebot. So there's two versions of that. One is the Stockton version. So this is where Apple the app goes in to party. And
I'm with Dylan Delvo, co-founder and executive director of Little Manila Rising, a group that provides all kinds of services to Stockton's Filipino-American community. In the first episode, Dylan walked me through the Little Manila Center. Now, we're at the Little Manila Historic Site, in front of the last three buildings that remain from the old Little Manila neighborhood.
What was this building?
So this is the Mariposa Hotel, and Filipinos would often frequent it because where else could you stay? But in the lobby of this hotel was where they organized the first asparagus strike in the 1930s. So seeds of what would be the Filipino farm labor movement, and of course eventually the UFW, United Farm Workers, lie in the lobby of this hotel.
What are these buildings now? Are they just not owned?
Yeah.
There's like for sale signs, no trespassing.
Yeah, they're mostly empty.
The buildings are old, worn down, on a street that looks pretty much abandoned, right next to a freeway, a gas station, a McDonald's, and really old homes.
Like on that corner, you would find people selling drugs.
On the last episode, we talked about Stockton's rocky history, from boomtown to bankruptcy, and its latest innovations under a new mayor. Feel free to hit pause on this and go back to that part if you need a refresher. I'll be right here. Now, to tell you the story of what happens to Little Manila and these three remaining buildings, I have to tell you the story of two friends, Dylan and Don. So Dylan Delvo meets Don Mabalon, a professor and activist, before she becomes a professor and activist. They meet as kids, born and raised in Stockton, California. They see each other at family parties, which in Filipino culture means everyone's invited, not just immediate family. They become actual friends in middle school. Don talks a lot. Dylan thinks she's annoying. It's the start of a lifelong friendship. After high school, Dylan goes to college at San Francisco State. Don goes to UCLA. They don't reconnect until years later, in the late 90s, when they both come back to Stockton. They see each other at a local Filipino festival.
There was a barrio fiesta, and she was manning one of the Filipino t-shirt booths called Downright Pinoy. I don't know if you guys remember. That was a long, long time ago.
What is Downright?
And Don tells Dylan that the city is going to redevelop what remains of Little Manila.
And she was like saying, hey, they want to destroy part of Little Manila. And we're like, I'm not a developer. Like, you know, like, what are we going to do about it? And she said, we could start organizing. It's like, we're not even organizers.
Dylan studied film in college, so Don asks if he could make a documentary about it with her. And they team up. They actually film the destruction of some of these buildings. But instead of just making a movie, they start a movement. They form the Little Manila Foundation, now called Little Manila Rising. They work to get the city to officially designate what remains of Little Manila as a historic site. Here's Don at the dedication event.
The youth are here. The elderly are here. Fifth generation and immigrant, north side and south side, manungs and manangs, veterans, farm laborers, and professionals, old-timers and newcomers, all of us together here are making history as we dedicate the Little Manila Historic Site. So what's the big deal about these four blocks? Some see a slum filled with poor people, too dangerous to traverse after dark. Some see a freeway, a hulking mountain of asphalt and concrete. Some see a 76 station, a McDonald's. Some see prime real estate. If only these brown, poor people and decrepit buildings could be cleared out of here. What do we see as Filipino-Americans at the corner of Lafayette and El Dorado streets? We see our history. We see our community. We see our past. And through understanding and respecting and reclaiming that past, we see our future. As we dedicate this historic
It's a proud moment in Stockton's Filipino history. Things are looking up, but then they hit another roadblock.
A few months after we dedicate this historic site, the city names this a redevelopment zone.
To save the last three buildings of Little Manila, Dylan and Don have to make a redevelopment plan for 8 square blocks.
Of a community no longer so much made up of Filipinos anymore, mostly Chinese, African American, Mexican American.
Filipino folks had largely been pushed out of this area in the 1960s as part of another so-called redevelopment plan, which paved the way for a crosstown freeway built through the heart of Little Manila. We can see and hear the freeway from where I'm standing with Dylan right now.
So what happened?
So we found out there was another developer that had already been working for over a year for a plan to build an Asian-themed strip mall in these 8 square blocks. And so the idea was that there was going to be like this grocery anchor, something like a Ranch 99. And that was kind of the trade-off, is that it was Asian-themed, right?
So at this point, Dylan and Don want to propose a new plan. Instead of an Asian-themed village, they want to build a destination that would stake the history of Filipino-Americans in the city and the nation. They tell city officials they need time to make their plan, but they kind of underestimate this because, you know, they're college kids.
So we ask for 3 months extra, which because, you know, you're just coming from college and so you think you can do anything in a semester, right? But really, if you would have asked 40-year-old Dylan, it was like maybe a 2-year delay. And so they kind of laughed at us when we asked for that. And so they gave us a 3-month extension.
3 short months to come up with a professional redevelopment plan. It's a tall order, but Dylan and Don are determined. In those 3 months, they hold meetings with community stakeholders to envision what they want in the neighborhood.
At the same time, Don Mabalon is working with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and our site gets named one of the 11 most endangered historic sites in America. Because of that, the History Channel, AP, picks up the story, and it becomes this international story, and we're asking people to write letters to the city council, to the mayor.
Dylan and Don have major plans to revitalize the old neighborhood, preserve the 3 buildings, and build a national Filipino-American museum. Big developers get interested in the project. It is a big deal.
Okay, you're telling me the story. This is 2003. I'm looking at these buildings, and these buildings are here. So something happened.
So in October of 2003, the community comes together, and we actually have a real development plan that we're able to submit to the city. End of the day, the city just says, oh, we're out of money. Really, they're kind of not. They're developing all over the place. And they decide not to do any development.
So the good news is they saved the 3 buildings. The bad news is nothing else happened. Today, the buildings are decaying and the streets are cracked, with no signs of a Filipino-American museum, let alone a good cleanup in the near future. There are banners with Filipino faces and signs that say Little Manila Historic Site. But most people seem to drive by here and miss all of that. As mentioned last episode, Don Mabalon recently passed away. But her work in the Filipino-American community lives on through Little Manila Rising. But listening to Dylan talk about the ways they tried to work with the city, tried to fight for their history and preserve it, then got stopped short of their goal, it's kind of disheartening and frustrating. We walk to the car, and I ask Dylan why he does this super hard work.
Although I was born and raised in Stockton, in South Stockton specifically, I knew nothing about my own community or my own family. My father was a Manong. He came to America in 1928 at the age of 18. He had me really, really late in life. He didn't have me until he was like 63.
Wow.
And so there's actually a population, a pretty large population of Filipino families they call tri-generation family. You know, we understand that had to happen because the ability for them to go back to the Philippines and to marry a Pinay really doesn't happen until after 1960-something, right? So I'm born in 73.
Dylan's father, a Manong, didn't want him to be a farm worker and didn't teach him Filipino languages, so he wouldn't end up in English as a second language class, or ESL. Growing up, Dylan and his family rarely talked about the past.
When I started taking ethnic studies classes at San Francisco State, it really affected me. I was extremely angry that I had to move to San Francisco to learn about this hometown and to learn about, you know, my own family.
Thank you. Dylan and Don learned about their city's Filipino history when they left it to go to college. That's when they learned about the Manongs who roamed Little Manila like spiffy brown Clark Gables. Learning about that history changed their lives in a way. So much so that when they moved back home, saving that history became their full-time jobs. Don is a professor and historian at San Francisco State University. Dylan as a leader in his community, guiding Little Manila Rising's efforts on the ground in Stockton. So that's what happened to Little Manila. The next question is, what's happening to it now? What's the future of Little Manila? And what happened to the old Manongs? That's after the break. Hey, Patrick.
Yo.
Do you like the podcast Long Distance?
Yeah.
Then consider helping the show.
I like it. How?
There are lots of ways to help. You can share Long Distance with friends or family in real life or on social media.
Oh, damn.
Don't forget to use the hashtag Long Distance Radio or tag at Long Distance Radio so we can like and share.
Hashtag will do.
You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. That helps a lot.
Done did. 5 stars.
And if you're feeling extra generous, consider donating to support the production of the show. You can find more information on this at longdistanceradio.com/donate.
www.alreadydidthat.com.
Donations will cover things like podcast platform fees, website fees, transportation, and other production needs. If you have questions or are interested in becoming a show sponsor, hit me up at hello@longdistanceradio.com. Now back to the show.
So we're entering this high school. Edison High.
I walk into a classroom at Edison High. It's after school. You'd think high school students these days would rather be on their phones somewhere. But nope, these students are in class, getting ready for another session of the Little Manila After School Program. The room is plastered with colorful posters with historic figures like Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez, alongside Larry Itliong, a Manong who led the Filipino farm workers during the 1965 Delano grape strike. There are piles and piles of school t-shirts and other spirit wear in metal shelves. Apparently, this classroom belongs to the student leadership teacher, Brian Batugo.
Hey, Brian. So how do these classes usually go? Like, what's the
format?
Sketch, yeah.
So in terms of the classes, the sketch.
You might recognize him from last episode. He's the arts director at the Little Manila Center, and he shot the Facebook Live video after the alleged hate crime. Full disclosure, I met Brian in college when he went to school with my sister at UC Berkeley.
After school, the bell rings. A lot of people gather in one of the classrooms. Once we gather, usually we wait for the teachers to come in. Sometimes they have snacks. After that, we usually go into some sort of form of icebreaker, get students used to the space again. And it's usually relevant to whatever the topic or the lesson of the day.
Brian's been involved with the Little Manila Center since high school, and he went to Edison High. Like Dylan, he's born and raised in Stockton. When the center was vandalized, he was horrified, heartbroken, especially for his students who were the first to see what happened. But he also saw something kind of positive come out of all this.
It's unfortunate that it happened, but the silver lining behind this vandalism or this hate crime even is that people started paying attention. People started thinking like, oh, there's a center in downtown that's dedicated to like Filipino-American history and art. Like, what is that?
That is the Little Manila Center. We went to it last episode. Recently, it moved to a newer, larger location in another part of Stockton. But the team there does work all over the city. Because this is what Little Manila is today. Not just an old historic site, not just a center, but a movement to build community and preserve history. It's the legacy of the Manongs and an extension of the hard work Dylan and Don started years ago. Right now, I'm sitting in a session of the Little Manila After School Program, or LMASP, while my co-producer, Patrick, takes photos. We're watching a slideshow of a recent cultural event the class took part in, and I realize what this class is all about. It's a mix of ethnic studies, Filipino studies, and life prep 101. This is not a mandatory class. There are no grades, no real incentives other than learning stuff and free snacks. And yet, every week, the room is packed, with freshmen all the way to seniors and students from other schools. The students call their teachers ate and kuya, which mean older brother or sister. Dylan and Brian are Kuya Dylan and Kuya Brian. Another teacher, Ate Elaine, leads today's lesson.
Welcome, all of you, to LMASP. Some of you have taken surveys at the beginning of the semester. A lot of you were talking about the college experience, what to do in college, how to survive in college.
Basically, the teachers made a PowerPoint presentation with tips on how to make it after high school, how to survive college. After an icebreaker, the students count off into groups for an activity. Kuya Dylan explains.
Today we're talking about kind of the fears that we may have being a member of the Filipino community, right? So what are the factors or maybe the pressures that you feel are coming from your family? Because, right, this is the Little Manila After School Program. So we're not just talking about college. It's college, but college specifically regarding to you and your family and expectations and all that stuff.
With that, the groups get to work. What are their post-high school fears or expectations? I walk around the room to listen and learn. The students take it away from here.
Okay, in college. Let's see, being in debt.
Debt?
In debt?
Debt.
Is that an expectation or is it a reality?
Should I draw money signs?
What are you writing? I'm writing actually doing things on my own once I graduate from college. It's something that I'm afraid of because I won't really have like guidance. I'll have to do things on my own, make my own decisions. I won't have like my mom telling me what to do.
So you're kind of excited, but you're also scared.
Yeah, I am.
What's your name?
Celine Corpus.
Oh, Celine. How can you spell your name?
If I sound pleasantly surprised, it's because I am. Celine is the student who posted photos of the alleged hate crime at the Little Manila Center on Twitter. She was one of the students who found it first. I talked about her in the first episode, and I saw her tweets before coming here. This is our first time meeting.
I really like learning about things that are not really taught in my own classroom, and I like the environment here because the teachers are amazing. They're really my support system, and I can tell them anything when it comes to school, my personal life, or anything in particular.
Do you get a grade here?
No, we don't. We don't get a grade.
You just come for fun?
Yeah, I just come for fun.
Is it really fun?
Yeah, I enjoy it.
What's the best part about it?
I think the best part is every time I leave a workshop every Tuesday, I learn something new, and like I apply it into my own life.
What's like a lesson you learned recently?
Colonization. So I learned that it's like the action of another territory taking over another territory under no circumstance. So they basically take over their culture, their values, if I'm saying that right.
Where did this happen? Like, why did you guys talk about
it? We talked about it because...
Did it happen to Filipinos?
It did happen in the Philippines. That's why we have a lot of colonial mentalities. Like, for example, like for Filipinos, they don't prefer like dark skin. They think the lighter you are, the prettier you are. So that's an example of colonial mentality. Like you don't realize your own identity. You're trying to change it for other people's perspective, but really you're not being you. Like, you're not being your culture.
Thank you so much.
I let Celine go so she can finish her group project. Then the teachers call time, and each group presents their work. Here's Celine again.
This is our group. this is like a mixture of our fears and our expectations. So some examples were poor time management, distractions, freshman 15, actually like leaving, like actually going out and doing your own thing, and being broke, a weak mindset, failing. We're getting into relationships, stress, bad roommates, dropping out, butthurt roommates, bad financial decisions, racist people, white people.
The list goes on. A lot of their fears revolve around paying for college and failing. At the end of the session, the students seem to find comfort in the act of communicating these fears to each other, finding commonalities and support. Kuya Dillon sums up today's lesson with a throwback to the ancestors.
The other thing you need to know is that once upon a time, there were other Filipinos, and they were 17, 18 years old. And the choice that they had was, should I get on a boat and possibly never see my family again in order for them to survive, right? They were your age, practically making that type of decision, right? Going to a whole brand new land, a whole another country. And they were able to survive, and they were able to create their own community, a community that we get to cherish today. That's a part of us, right? So if they can do that, you can do this. There is no difference between them and you, only that you were born at a different time, right? And
so it is our. As I watch the students listen intently to Kuya Dillon, I can't help but think about how they are the present and future of Little Manila. They're the descendants of the Manungs and generations of Filipino immigrants who followed them. And it's kind of amazing that these students get to talk about their own culture and history, as well as general how to survive in school and life stuff in high school with free snacks. To illustrate just how awesome this is, I want to fast forward real quick to months after this trip. I'm back in LA with Patrick. Hey, Patrick.
Hey.
What were you like in high school?
I was pretty chill, pretty mellow. Had a bunch of friends, got along with most folks. I grew up in the Bay, and I used to listen to a bunch of different kind of music.
Like Pavement?
Pavement, for sure.
I know that from episode one.
The Far Side, Souls of Mischief, a lot of Hi-Ro. Yeah, this is how we chill from 93 till. This is how we chill from 93 till.
This is how we chill from 93 till. This is how we chill from 93 till. When I was in high school, I also was in drama class and journalism. And I made sock puppets and AP US history. Like, that's just who I was. I also grew up in the Bay Area, and I was listening to, like, Mac Dre because, like, there was the hyphy movement, you know? I'm out of this world, not your run of the mill. Remember when you went to Edison High School in Stockton?
Yeah, for sure.
What did you think of those students?
I thought they were cool. I mean, they were different from me when I was a kid. They all wanted to be there, you know? So I was encouraged.
Did you have a class like that in high school where you could go in and learn about, you know, school stuff, but also Filipino-American stuff? Did that exist where you went to school?
Nah, not at all.
Okay, me neither.
The key is free snacks, I think. I think that's what we never had when I was younger.
That's true. One of the questions I wanted to answer in this episode is what happened to the Manungs, like in their later years. It's not really that easy to answer. The Manungs lived through a lot, the Great Depression, World War II, the Civil Rights Movement. And while many were farm workers, a lot of them ended up doing other things, like working in salmon canneries in Alaska or as tiki bartenders in Los Angeles. Trust me on this one, I made a whole podcast story about this for a show called Offshore. A link to it on the website. But I think one event that sort of highlights their place in history and their farm worker legacy happened in the 1960s, not too far from Stockton, in Delano, California. I talked to Patrick about it. What about the Delano grape strike? What do you know about that?
It was a grape strike with the Manungs and Cesar Chavez and the guy with the glasses and Larry Itliong. Wait, he's the guy with the glasses, right?
Yep.
In September 1965, farm workers began a walkout in Delano, California, which has since become the longest and most important strike in agricultural history. The strike, called against 35 grape growers in the San Joaquin Valley, was the first ever organized by the farm workers themselves. They demanded recognition in the form of a union and a minimum wage of $1.40 an hour. Led by Cesar Chavez and his newly formed National Farm Workers Association, or NFWA, the strikers transformed their local walkout into a national plea for farm representation. Within a year, the cry of huelga, the Spanish word for strike, had begun to sound throughout the country.
So it was this big strike where Filipino farm workers voted to walk off the grape farms of Delano, California to demand for fair pay. So a lot of people have heard of, you know, Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta, but not everyone knows that it was actually the Filipinos who kickstarted the whole farm worker movement of the 1960s.
They did a Kickstarter.
Well, sort of.
Where are your brothers and sisters over here? Come on! Come on now!
This strike began on September 8, 1965, and lasted more than 5 years. And it was kickstarted by Larry Itliong, Philip Veracruz, and other leaders of the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, which was comprised of mostly Filipino manongs. It was Larry Itliong who convinced Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta to have the Mexican-American National Farm Workers Association join the strike. And in August of 1966, their groups formed the United Farm Workers. And the rest, as they say, is history.
You go, manongs.
That's right. Okay, Patrick, I have one little tidbit of Filipino-American history to ask you about. What do you know about Bebot?
You mean Bebot? I always thought it was pronounced Bebot, like robot. And B-boy kind of combined into one.
Like bebot, 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 bebot.
Yeah, like I'm a bebot and I dance the robot. Bebo, 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 bebo,
one thing I've learned through the making of this story is that the manongs are an integral part of the history of not just Filipino Americans, with the Filipino diaspora. Their lives took different turns, just like my own great uncle's and my grandfather's story at the top of the show. And they weren't perfect, but they were some of the first to leave their home country to go overseas in search of new opportunities. And that is not easy to do. Some manongs found jobs and a life in America. Others took detours. Some married, many did not. Some were part of the farm labor movement and the United Farm Workers. Some lived at the I Hotel in San Francisco before they got pushed out in the 1970s. Others lived out their lives in a special home for farm worker seniors called Agbayani Village in Delano, California. There are many more stories about the manongs, and I hope I get to them in future episodes. One thing's for sure, the manongs may be long gone now, but they will never and should never be forgotten. Their influence in our lives is long-lasting, and there's power in remembering, celebrating, and preserving their legacy. That's what Dylan Delvo and Don Mabalon, descendants of the Manongs of Stockton, California, set out to do. And that's what they teach at the Little Manila Center and the Little Manila After School Program. It's not easy work, but for them, it's important. Back in the classroom, the sense of purpose, this building of community, and preservation of history is especially apparent when, at the end of class, after Kuya Dylan's final words, a student named Justin Yiz leads the group in something they do every week, a remnant of the Manong's farm worker legacy. It's sort of a group chant called Isang Bagsak, which literally translates to one fall.
What Isang Bagsak is a unity clap used by Filipino and Mexican farm workers because they couldn't speak like each other's languages, so they had a language barrier. And so after a hard day of work, they'd like group together and do this clap. So it starts with the beat of your heart and slowly gets faster.
Come on, Jerry. Come on, Jackie. Come on, Pete.
This story was written, mixed, and produced by me, Paula Mardo. Co-producer is Patrick Ipino. Cover art is by Selena Calma, with title design by me. Theme song is by Sea Light and the Prisms. Music in this episode is by the Black Eyed Peas, D. Yan Key, Mac Dre, Lee Rosevere, and Souls of Mischief. Special thanks to the students and teachers of Little Manila. To learn more about them and their work, head to littlemanila.org. And big thanks to my family, especially to our family historian, Francis Pangilinan, with key assists from Gaia Lontok and my mom, Trixie Pangilinan Mardo. And very, very special thanks to Rafael Bernardo Pangilinan, also known as Daddy. He had a surprise 99th birthday a few weeks ago in the Philippines. I wasn't able to make it, but I heard it was fun.
Oh my gosh! Wow!
Happy birthday, Daddy. I want to share scenes from the next episode with you. But first, thank you again for listening. We made it to episode 2. This was harder than I thought, but I'm so, so happy to be doing this. A lot of you have been asking about how you can support the show so I can make more episodes more frequently. I really appreciate these questions, and to be honest, I'm still figuring things out. But there is a donate button on the website, longdistanceradio.com. Feel free to give whatever you want, if and when you want. These episodes take a lot of time and work. I have to do things like research, interviews, editing, script writing, recording, then re-editing and editing again and again and again, with notes from my co-producer, Patrick Ipino, and sometimes friends and colleagues. Donations to cover the costs of time and my own money spent working on this would be very much appreciated. I'll have more information about sponsorship soon, too. If you're interested in sponsoring, hit me up at hello@longdistanceradio.com. And don't forget to follow the socials. Long Distance is on Instagram at Long Distance Radio. There's also a Facebook group called Long Distance Radio Club. And if groups aren't your thing, there's a Facebook page you can like for updates and all that stuff. Last thing, ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts kind of help, I think. So leave one if you can. Thanks to those who already have. Now, on the next episode of Long Distance.
One person said, your lead character is both gay and Filipino. That's too many identities. It's too inconvenient to the plot. Couple that with the fact that everyone looks the same, it just doesn't help. And when I walked up to the front, like this guy, this actor, he just looked like, oh my God, there's the director. And he had his like headshots ready. And he was like, hi, this is a marvelous film. It's a marvelous film.
That's next time on Long Distance. See you next month on the 15th. Thanks for listening. Thank you.